The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks for hanging out with me. Let me get my headset here on just a little bit tighter. Okay, here we go. Great show today. We're going to have so much fun. Inflation-proofing your portfolio. What does that look like? We're going to talk about some products that are out there that can give you bond-like returns, or even better, maybe market-like returns, but with bond-like protection. And then later on, if we have time, people who hate retirement and what the rest of us can learn from it. So just a really fun show. We'll get Hot Rod on in a few minutes during the inflation-proofing your portfolio, and we'll make that happen. Okay, let's do a little news of the week brought to you by, of course, Unrivaled Electric. I need to give them a call. My GFI has popped, and landscape lights are not working. So if you're listening to the show, my friend, text me, call me, and we'll get you guys out there to get me all fixed up. But Unrivaled Electric, yes, they want to be your electrician like mine. Generators, solar arrays, you name it, 812-361-3604. Find them on Facebook or online. And my good friend Dirk Bland, KennyBlandAuctions.com. They are your full-service auction service. They will offer the pre-planning of the sale of your estate or real estate. Again, visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. And longtime supporter of the show, Lance Like at the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. Just referred someone to you this week, my friend. All right, how about the S&P 500? Yeah, how about it? It's actually down 7.5% year-to-date as of last Thursday. Nothing to rival the craziness in the bond market for sure. You know, I actually had a chance to visit with the GM employees this week down at the foundry in Bedford. Had a heck of a fun time with you guys. So hopefully a lot of new listeners as we get you to subscribe to the podcast and obviously following us on all of our social media outlets. But we talked a little bit about this, 30-year-old versus a 40-year-old versus a 50-year-old. Well, a 30-year-old who is investing $500 at the beginning of every month in a tax-deferred, like a 401k, they'll get to about $600,000 by the time they're 60 years old, assuming around a 7% rate of return. But if you just waited 5 years or you didn't start until you're 35, you would have to increase your return to nearly 9% to get to the same number. So definitely start early, invest often. Of course, that ignores the impact of taxes, which are a big deal to me, upon withdrawal of those tax-deferred accounts. For the 9 years from 1973, when I was 3 years old, to 1981, when I was, I guess, 11 years old, inflation averaged, believe it or not, 9.2% for those 9 years. From 2012 through the end of 2020, inflation averaged just 1.6%. And that's why the Fed early on said, hey, we're okay letting inflation run hot for a bit because we have some catch-up to make up. And now they're saying, oh my gosh, this isn't what we expected because inflation was actually up 8.5% for the 1 year ending March 31st. That's more inflation the United States experienced over the 4 years combined from 17 to 20 when we totally had advances of CPI of 7.9% over the entire 4 years. So let's blame it on inflation, right? Everyone's blaming everything on inflation. 63%. Of Americans surveyed during the first week of April rate the condition of the U.S. economy to be fairly bad. 32% say very bad. So the dominant reason for these people and their disappointment in the U.S. economy is, yes, inflation and the rising cost of goods and services. All right, 60% of America workers born in 1943 were employed by companies that offered a defined benefit pension plan. Just 6% of American workers born in 64 were employed by companies that offer a defined benefit pension plan. And I brought that up to the folks at GM, the old view of retirement and the new view of retirement. The old view was you put your time in, your years in, you had your pension, your Social Security, very little reliance on your personal savings. But that narrative was flipped mainly in the baby boom generation. And that was people born in, you know, the late 40s into the early 60s. And those people, for the most part, are in that you're on your own or yo-yo world when it comes to retirement planning. Supply of bonds are to be on the rise. After 2 years of adding nearly $120 billion a month of bond purchases, that's called quantitative easing, the Fed will begin its quantitative tightening in May of 2022, not just by raising interest rates, but allowing $95 billion a month of bonds to roll off the $8.5 trillion balance sheet. Basically, the Fed's just saying we will not reinvest the $95 billion a month of maturing bonds back into the newly issued bonds like they have in the past. And that represents, yes, treasuries, but also mortgage-backed securities. One of the main reasons that mortgages have been so cheap for so long, it's been the Fed buying, buying, buying. Now, I just saw the 30-year mortgage rates are over 5% now. So be grateful that you nabbed those twos and threes when you had a chance. And then I've obviously, you know, I've been through a lot in my 28 years. I went through a few of them from the Asian currency crisis to Russian bond defaults to 9/11 to the tech bubble bursting to the biggest financial crisis in 2008-09 that we've ever experienced in my lifetime to a, yes, pandemic that we just went through. But here we go again, right? Russia, they have until Wednesday, next Wednesday, the 4th of May, to pay $2.2 billion of foreign debt that was originally due to be paid to an American banking system back in April 4th. If Russia is unable to pay the debt in U.S. dollars, which it appears it will not be able to do, then they'll have to pay in rubles, which they're saying would cause it to be in default. So that would be the first time in a long time that Russia has defaulted on their debt, but it wasn't the first time. It's happened before, and we have a little bit of a playbook on what it looks like when Russia does that. And then finally, how many calls, questions have I received about this? Oh, 50, maybe? I-bonds, right? Inflation. No one wanted I-bonds when inflation was at 1.6%. But all of a sudden, they're like, hey, I keep hearing about this I-bond paying 7 or 8%. Is that true? Yes, the answer is true. You have to go to Treasury Direct to buy it. It will pay now currently 7.12% for the first 6 months for any bonds bought by the end of April. The most any person can buy is a $10,000. So they look at the semi-annual inflation rate. They then add some other factors in, and you can go to Treasury Direct and just pull it right up. It'll show you exactly how they come up with the composite rate. But it has to do with inflation. It has to do with another component. And at the end of the day, it comes up to 7.12%. Now, that is for the first 6 months. My guess is you'll be pretty good on the following 6 months. And you have to hold it for a while before you can cash it in with no penalty. So, yes, it is true. So if you want to learn more, go to treasurydirect.gov, and they will hook you right up. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, speaking of inflation, how do you inflation-proof your portfolio? Hot Rod will be joining me next. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Well, everyone's talking about it, right? How do you inflation-proof your portfolio? Rod Holloway now joins me on the phone. Rod, I was looking at a Wall Street Journal article that laid it out pretty good. It said, we're all on the hunt for the companies with the magic words during any spell of inflation, which is pricing power. So basically, any company that has the ability to adjust prices and people will pay it, are been high demand. Obviously, we went through the whole reopening trade that's been going on. That happened on and off throughout the COVID-19 thing. People snapped up airlines, hotel companies, cruise operators, betting that consumers stuck at home during multiple surges of this thing over the last couple of years would be willing to pay steep fares and high rates to get back on the road. The frenzy kind of got kicked off Wednesday when Delta Airlines, no recommendation to buy or sell that security, of course, was in strong demand. They said, yep, we're able to raise our prices. People are paying it, and they're happy to do it. And all the traveling that I've done this year, I would say from a visual of my own, yes, people are willing to pay double for the hotels in Las Vegas. They're willing to pay up for airline tickets. They're willing to do things that they maybe wouldn't have done a bit ago. So the race higher between companies' sales and the cost, right? If you can keep up with the cost of what you're trying to do and your sales can be increased quickly, that's what's been in demand. So like I've said many times on the show, you want to inflation-proof your portfolio, you have to own things. You can't loan to things. That's bonds. You got to own things, Hot Rod. So we've seen that in our own portfolios. We've seen it across the board when you see what's up and what's down. The inflation-proofing stocks, which are the ones that have the ability to adjust their prices quickly and people are willing to pay, they're the ones that have led this charge.
Yeah, most certainly have. And in most circumstances, one of the easier ways to think of that is also typically things that if you held them in your hand and dropped them on your foot, it would hurt. So it's actually things and products that are out there. So the raw materials, so commodities. Obviously, everyone immediately thinks of gold and silver. Right. And yes, there is a play in gold and silver when it comes to fighting inflation. But I'm talking more specific products that are utilized. Copper, nickel, palladium, those types of things that are going into manufacturing and production. You know, gold, yes, gold jewelry is something that is out there and is bought and people like it and wear it. But that's typically not a driving force behind the price of gold itself, is how much jewelry is being sold. So, yes, it can be a bit of an inflation hedge. Real estate, similar. Doesn't automatically mean that real estate itself is going to appreciate right after you buy it in an inflationary time. But obviously, it falls into that category of things, stuff you can physically touch and feel, and they do normally over time work with inflation and work their way up as well. But broadly speaking, yes, as you have alluded, equities typically are a better inflation fighter than bonds, which is that lending side of things, and then getting into that more material side, even sometimes in the consumer staples, which is more of a safe and steady eddy and not a lot of flashy growth behind it. But they're also the ones that are selling the products that, even if there is an economic slowdown or just because there's inflation, doesn't mean people stop buying laundry detergent. They don't stop buying bread, milk, those types of staples that we all need on a weekly basis. So even when the prices go up, people are still going to buy them. Now, they may drop down and go from a name brand to a more generic brand, but at the same time, they're still buying that product out there, and that is a great area to offset. I remember the last time we had this big energy boom, that was one of the things we talked a lot about to our clients. Well, every time they felt pain at the pump, hey, think about what you own and think about some of the energy companies. So, yes, it's painful paying that gas price at the pump, but no one understands you're also on the other side reaping some rewards in your portfolio because you own some of those energy stocks that are collecting all of those higher prices on gasoline.
So I had a chance to speak to a bunch of GM folks this week, and we talked about inflation, and I said, listen, have you ever heard of the rule of 72 when it comes to investing? And almost everybody raised their hand. Well, if you don't know what that means that if you take the expected return that you're going to get on something divided into 72, then that is how long it takes to double your money. But then I'm like, have you ever heard of the reverse rule of 72? And no one knew what I was talking about. Well, it's divide the inflation into 72, and that tells you how long it will be before you need to double your income to buy the same stuff. So let's do the math. If we have 4% inflation in 18 years, I have to have double the income to buy the same things I do today. Let's break it down even more. In 9 years, I need to have, you know, half of my money, half more money to buy the same thing. So if I need $2,000 in 9 years, I'm going to need $3,000 to buy the same stuff. So it is imperative for people to own things that hedge inflation. You mentioned real estate. If prices were up 10% and we had 8% inflation, what was your real returns too? And that's the way you must think of things. So going back to the owning versus loaning, bonds. So bonds they still provide what most people want them to provide, a reliable income stream, a definitive maturity date, and all that kind of stuff. But if you own something paying 3% and you have inflation at 8, well, then you went negative 5. If you own cash, you went negative 8. I mean, you have to own things. I love real estate, as you well know, Rod, and there are real estate investment trusts out there. Now, sometimes they can be a little bit of a lagger. And what I mean by that is rents don't always go up by inflation, but they tend to. So rental real estate typically will track inflation pretty well. But we have offices empty all over the country. We have, you know, maybe it's grocery stores you'd rather have. So leases are tied to, many times, inflation or CPI. So it is just knowing where to go and being in the right spot. From a stock perspective, money managers are flocking to hedge inflation. Travel companies, energy companies, even utilities. That's always a shocker, right, Hot Rod? Because it's like, utility companies? Those are boring, but that's been a great place to have some money stuck away during these times.
Yeah, most certainly has. I mean, we've talked about, we've spent a large majority of this year looking at all the broad sectors and that they were all negative except energy. Well, the first one to crack its way into positive territory as far as a year to day was the utility sector. The financials had briefly poked its head into it, but they didn't stay there very long before they went back and turned negative. Consumer staples now, as of this morning's report that I received, they're now positive year to day. So once again, those things that you look at that give you some predictability and a potential offset to inflation are the things that are doing well. Now, there's a much bigger story in energy than just simply inflation protection, of course. That's up 45%, that sector year to day. But the consumer staples, a little over 4.5%. Utilities are now positive 7% year to day. Every other sector is negative year to day. Now, does that mean that those other sectors are bad in inflationary environments? No, it doesn't. They're down less in most cases than what bond portfolios are. So to the point that you've made, that from an inflation fighting perspective, you want to own more stocks than you do bonds as an inflation fighter. Remember, you already said it, Dave, there is still a reason to own bonds, and it's more for principal protection and contractual obligation to that income stream that they're paying you, but they're not necessarily an inflation fighter unless you go to buy specifically inflation bonds, which we talked about previously last year when the government I-bonds, which are limited on how much you can buy in those, were paying at over 7. Well, guess what? Inflation hadn't gone down. So the next reset on those I-bonds isn't going to be any lower. It's still going to be a high inflationary rate. So anybody that has those extra dollars just sitting in the bank account and don't believe they need it, that's a great avenue to look at. Once again, you are restricted $10,000 per Social Security number, so a husband and wife could put $10,000 each into one of those, and then you're capped out for the year.
Yeah, why not? I did mention that in the news of the week. Why would you not do that? If you have money sitting in the bank, why not? I mean, it's a little bit of restriction on when you can sell it or how long you have to hold it, but yeah, 7.12% for anything bought through the end of April. So yeah, we've had a lot of questions about that, so that's why I brought it up, and you and I didn't even talk about that, so you rang the bell again. I appreciate it very much. Rod, we're going to let you go. When we come back, folks, we're going to talk about some of these products that are available that could give you bond-like or maybe even market-like returns, but with bond-like protection. Rod, I know you know what I'm talking about. I was just showing that off to a client before I came in today, and that's some of those buffer products that we've been promoting and using, and they've held up, man. They're looking good, especially when you've got an opportunity to go and decide, which I know you keep a spreadsheet of, do I buy this month? Do I buy last month? Do I buy last November's? And that's really been a terrific strategy. Actually, Rod, why don't you hang on with me, and we'll go into the next segment because I want you to talk about that. We'll be back, folks. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Now, I'm not bragging, folks, but I am going to take a moment and brag. So Rod did all of this research years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, on these products that we really weren't sure of, and they were these buffer ETFs. And basically, there's all kinds of different buffer ETFs. We'll get into that in a second. So coming into this year, I was looking at these clients saying, yeah, we need to have some fixed income, but I really am not super excited about jumping into bonds right now with what we expect to happen, and it's exactly what happened. Bond values drop quickly, interest rates have been on the rise. So let's look at another alternative, something that if you don't need the coupon, if you don't need the 2 or 3 or 4% interest rate, how can we get into something that gives us a fighting chance to make more money than we could on bonds, similar risk profile to bonds? And Rod, what we did, as you well know, we started rolling these buffered ETFs out like they were candy early on in the year. And when I met with the client today, who's been a client for 4 months, he had a pretty substantial holding of these, and they were down 0.43% for the year. I said, if you would have been in a bond portfolio, you would have been down 5, 6, or 7%. So I think we made a pretty good call. Give folks a little bit of some insight on how we've positioned these and the availability and how you can decide if you want to buy this month's, last month's, or this version or that version, because that's really been a dandy. Because yeah. I saw the one you bought in November, and this guy came in like February, so it's been pretty cool.
Yeah, certainly has. We were very interested in conceptually the product when it first came out, but always with any brand new product, we'd like to see it go from beginning to end of its full cycle. And for those, it was a 1 year basically deal. So we watched them for a time before we said, okay, hey, you know what? Conceptually, it sounded great. We really liked it and we're very interested. And then we saw that, okay, hey, the product actually worked like it was supposed to. So we became even more interested and then started dabbling in it a little bit, but more heavily here as we started approaching the rising interest rate environment and the problem that you have already laid on the table, Dave, of what do you do with these bond dollars that you don't want fully exposed to equity because you don't want to take that kind of risk on as you're preparing for retirement or starting retirement. That you need something that's going to grow a little bit more than bonds and not be as interest rate sensitive, which is going to be the later bond. So we build bond ladders typically for our people as they're approaching retirement, in retirement. That way every year we've got dollars that are freed up to replenish their cash distribution buckets. So we have plugged these ETFs in the middle of that bond ladder and then what we call our long-term bucket, which is the equity strategies, to say, hey, rather than buy some of these longer maturity bonds that may really suffer some volatility as interest rates go up, let's buy these. Yes, they're an equity product, but we have some protection on them that can minimize the downside for us, but can potentially give us more upside than what we would probably see out of the bond product. And since they're going to be able to sit there for quite a while before we need to tap into them to replenish that cash distribution bucket, we don't necessarily have to have the cash flow that we were giving up off of the bonds at the back end of that ladder. Now, from the standpoint of analyzing, in the beginning, they basically had one a quarter. Then they had one a month. Now you not only have them one a month, but you have them on varying different indices. For us and our clients, we stick pretty simple with the major indices, be it the S&P 500, the Triple Qs, the NASDAQ 100, the Dow Jones, and we normally stick more to what they call the deep and ultra buffers, meaning we're looking for protection on 25 to 30% sell-offs in the market. Now, they have protection out there and products that maybe protect you on 10% down or on 15% down. Remember, there is a trade-off. So for every protection you get, that means you're limited on your upside. So if you take smaller protection, down 10% protection, you're going to have a little higher cap than if you take that protect me from losing 25% and where that cap would be. But once again, where we're using them, the alternative was putting them into bonds where we didn't expect to make a whole lot of money anyway. So we're not concerned about being capped, because those caps are far higher than what we would ever anticipate getting in appreciation of buying a bond that wouldn't mature for 8, 9, 10, 11 years down the road.
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, I don't know how else to say it, but I just think it's fabulous that the industry has come up with these great products. And the fact is, like, you bought the November one because the market was down. Well, they already busted through the first layer of what we would say we're willing to accept in a downturn, which was 5%, to then pick up 25% downside protection with a cap that was over 10%, just by being aware of what's out there, what's already existing, what's already trading versus the new stuff. So, Rod, thank you for that.
Yeah, great point. Hey, real quick, let me just add to that real quick for you. Is what you're talking about is those deeper buffers. You participate in the first 5% down, and then you're protected the next 25 down. Well, they were already down when we went in and bought that one in November, so we were already setting on that buffer level, which meant the buffer was going to kick in as soon as the product started to go down. That also meant that their cap now had an extra 5% added to the cap. The websites have great tools that allow you to go in and look at where this product was when it was first initiated at that month and where it's at today in regards to how much cap is available and how much downside before you hit the buffer zone. And yes, we've been able to find what we believe have been some real gems for our clients by tapping into some of these and not having to participate in that first five down because it had already happened before we jumped in.
And that's what you pay an advisor for, folks. Rod, I'll let you go. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the insurance products that are available as well that do similar things, and again, the trade-offs there. So, Rod, thanks again. I'll see you back at the ranch.
You bet. Have a great show.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, yes, I'm going to talk about the annuity market. Yes, don't plug your ears. We're going to talk about the four different types of annuities and what I see as a really great opportunity for a lot of people to get, again, a bond-like return, probably even better, maybe market-like returns, even if the market's not up a ton and still giving you some downside protection. So again, it's all about risk management. That's what I told someone last week. When it comes to investing, it's about not taking the big hits. If you don't take the big hits over time, then you're usually going to win. We'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. You know, I had an article I read, I think this week, about the five questions every retiree should be asking about their moolah. In one, how should I adjust for expectations of inflation in the market? Well, we talked about that. With stocks being volatile, is it time to get more conservative with my retirement account? What does that mean? I read this article. I'm like, these are just stupid questions because the answers they gave were silly. Because I'm like, well, what does that mean, getting more conservative? Does that mean jumping into bonds? Well, why would you do that? Because if a 10-year treasury jumps from 1.5 to 2.8, which it did, and your bond values drop by 8%, I mean, what kind of conservative account am I jumping into? Is holding more cash a good idea since savings rates are likely to go up? I wouldn't count on that. There's a lot of money out there, and banks are like, you know what? We don't have to pay that much for you to put your money in the bank, but yet we're going to be able to charge more on our loans. So that's why, you know, financials have been you know, looking pretty sweet. And should I pare back my spending because my returns aren't as good this year? Well, if you have a good coordinated retirement income strategy, you shouldn't have to. If your accounts are down, that's money you wouldn't need for a long time. And like Rod said, even if your bond values are down, if you've put together a nice laddered portfolio, meaning I have maturities that happen this year, next year, the next year, then I shouldn't have to worry too much about it. So, yeah, so there's just a lot of different tools out there that can help you manage that kind of risk. So let's talk about annuities. There's four types of annuities. You have fixed annuities. That's like a time deposit at a bank. You give the insurance company your moolah. They give you a fixed interest rate for a fixed period of time, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, you know, kind of like a CD at the bank. And the rates are usually, you know, substantially better than you'll get at the bank. And if it's not in a retirement account, it is tax deferred, which means you only pay the tax when you take it out at the end. You have variable annuities, which has gotten the bad rap over the years because of all the expense associated with them. Yeah, they cost 3 to 4% to own every year. You get a lot of really great benefits for that. You get a death benefit, you get income benefits, you get all kinds of benefits. So it's really one of those things I'd look at and say, well, you know, to each your own. I'm not going to promote it or not promote it because everyone's different. You have the immediate annuities, which rarely people do, which is you give your money to the insurance company. Here you go. It's gone, right? And I'm going to get a payment for some period of time, life or 10 years, something like that. But the one that really has gained traction over the last decade is what's called fixed indexed annuities. What a fixed indexed annuity is, you give your money to the insurance company and they say, listen, like Rod said, if the market goes up, this is your participation. 50%, 70%, whatever the market goes up, you have a participation rate. If the market goes down, you don't lose anything. That's a true fixed rate, fixed index annuity. Now, those will lock you up for 5 years, 7 years, or 10 years. You get a 10% free withdrawal each year, so there is some liquidity, but there is zero downside risk. Now, why are these more attractive now than before? It's how they do it. You know, when you pop open the hood and say, well, that sounds pretty cool. How do they do that? Well, they have two components. They put so much of your money into fixed rate investments that at the end of the year will get you back to zero. So 95% of my money goes into a fixed rate investment. And this is under the hood. You don't see it all happening, but this is how they do it. And let's say they earn 5% on that. Well, that gets you close back to, you know, back to even. The other $5, 5%, they'll go buy an S&P 500 option or something else, and then that will give you a certain participation rate in the market. Now, they actually make money, so they take about 1.5% off their spread, and that's how they make their money. So you have zero risk every year. It annual resets every year, and you get some kind of a participation. Now, that is a true fixed index annuity. The ones that I have seen more use out of lately are things called performance-based or trigger performance rates. So here's how that works. Again, you go into the product, you pick your protection, down 10, down 15, whatever, down 20. But if the market, stock market, S&P generally, is flat or up at all, then you get a instant interest credit. And they range from about 7 to 12%. So again, another good bond alternative, right? I'm going into something where a market's already down for the year, maybe I'm not convinced it could go down another 15 or 20, or maybe it would, I don't know, but that's gonna be protected. But if it goes up at all or flat from here, I get a fixed interest rate, bang, 7 to 12%, kind of depending on the protection. Like Rod said, for everything you gain, you give a little bit up. So the more protection, the lower your cap. But I have seen this absolutely smoke it for people who are looking for a bond-like investment with a fighting chance to make more than you would make on your bonds, with eliminating any major downside risk. And by the way, because it's inside of an annuity, if it's non-IRA money, it is tax deferred. So it's been a really good tool for people that are higher income earners. And you know, I always say, why would you defer into the future? Well, I did a podcast on the exclusion ratios and how those can really, really work, and why sometimes deferring the tax on a portion of your money can work out well, especially if it's non-IRA. So there's a lot of gems to listen to in 2025, the final drive, what you need to know to win. And I have now recorded 14 podcasts, over 650 downloads already. So grateful for that. But obviously people are digging the information, and I've been out on the road speaking again, which has been great, getting a lot of people to buy into the narrative of, hey, listen, taxes are on sale. What do I need to do right now to make sure that me, my family, right, my heirs are protected from taxes destroying our retirement accounts? Yeah, we worry about inflation, but I'm telling you right now, taxes are the most expensive thing in retirement, bar none, all right? I had a great story this week that I told the GM folks, and I'll tell you because I want you to hear it too. So I had a client call. Dave is his name. No coincidence to that, right? And I talked to him again actually this morning. He's buying a condo up in Indianapolis. He needed $150,000. So we talked it through, and I'm like, okay, well, why don't we take $100,000 from your Roth IRA? That's free. We paid taxes on that years ago. Let's take $30,000 out of your bank account. He had about $60,000 in the bank. Let's take $20,000 out of the IRA. And because of the planning that we've been doing for the last several years, that was putting him in the 12% bracket, so a couple of grand in taxes that he had to pay. And that was it. So he got his $150,000 to buy the condo. It cost him a couple thousand in taxes. So I'm like, Dave, I did the math on this. Had you not done this planning and been paying these taxes off at the 12% and 22% for the years we've been doing it, and we're still doing it, we're probably not going to do it this year because of other reasons, but nonetheless, you could come get all your money free. Had we not done this, we would have taken $257,000 out of your IRA, paid the tax at 37%, 5% state and local, and to get you your $150,000. So we paid taxes at these low, ridiculous levels for him to enjoy his money. So I'll be doing a podcast this week on when is the right time to use your Roth money. Because that's the question, right? We're doing all this crazy planning, trying to get out of the crosshairs of higher taxes into tax-free, but then when do I use it, right? Do I die with it? Is that always the right thing to do? So if you want to, I would encourage you to listen to the podcast that will be in 2 weeks, because the one that's recorded already will go out Monday, and that was on why capital gains are different. And then we're going to do a when do I use my Roth podcast that will be out in a couple weeks. And oh, by the way, I'll be out of town next week. Doug Hughes will be out of town. So we will be replaying this show next week. So if you're listening next week, just know that next week is not next week. Next week is the first week in May. So we'll be back live in the studio the second week of May for another edition of Your Money with David Hayes. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, people who hate retirement, what the rest of us can learn. I don't have a lot of time, but I'll try to get through it. When we get back, it's Your Money with David Hayes. So you guys who listen on a regular basis know I had my dad on the show at the end of December. And dad turned 75 this year, still working, and we talked about when do you know it's time to retire. Well, you know, he's kind of been scratching his head this year a little bit, and we had a nice conversation on Friday of last week. And didn't take long for him to talk himself right back into saying, no, you're right, I'm going to continue to work, I love what I'm doing, I feel value. And when I gave him the old saying, Dad, can you travel when you want to travel? Answer out loud, yes. Do you get to relax when you want to relax? He said, yes. Do you get to serve when you want to serve? The answer is yes. Well, you're already living a great life, so why would you ever retire? So it basically talked the old man out of not retiring once again. But it is a dream for many people, right? After 30 or 40 years of work, they retire finally to able to live that life they long imagined. But for some of the people, it turns out to fall very, very short of what their imagination was. To retire full-time and shift your life, this guy named Brian Pope says, he was a retired professor. He said, I intellectually understood it, but really emotionally I struggled with it. He was out of the University of Texas. He calls his job a huge, exciting, and stimulating job, overseeing the School of Theater and Dance. He managed almost 90 people, ranging from research professors to cutting-edge artists. Though he loved the challenge, he was 69 and decided it was time to make way for new blood. So in 2009, he took a buyout package that started with a sabbatical and culminated into a full retirement a year later. Now, he wasn't prepared for what came next. In 2020, Mr. Pope and his wife Barbara moved permanently to their vacation home in New York. She was a costume designer, and, you know, of course, he was the professor. But he said admitting the fact that now he no longer had the fulfillment of being who he was in a previous life, he now felt emotionally empty. So he thought, well, what's missing for me? I'm a person who is wired to do things that are meaningful and have purpose culturally, intellectually. He said, I am lonely. This is common, folks, loss of identity. That's why we've promoted over the years the book, Don't Retire, Rewire. You have to answer the question, why do I work beyond the paycheck? I love having this conversation. To me, one of the most fulfilling things that I do as an advisor is help coach people through the emotional aspects of retirement. It's totally different for people that choose to retire, or those that retire for health reasons, or those that retire because they were forced out. And in every situation, there is an answer to that question, why do you work beyond the paycheck? How do you get the same fulfillment in retirement that you received while you're working? How do you get those attaboys, as we call it? And it is a process. So for people, yes, financially, boom, you're ready to retire. Are you ready emotionally to retire? Do you know what's next for you? You know, it's not for everybody to just go on the long walks on the beach, right? Or to hang out at the golf course every day. It's not for everybody. You have to have something else. Most people do. Now, some don't. Some will say, hey, I don't miss any of that, right? I don't miss the people. I don't miss the job. I don't miss the stress. I'm completely fine doing nothing. Well, that's okay too. But I'm just saying that if you are one of these people that retired and now regret it, having that kind of regret feeling of actually pulling the trigger, unretirement is a new phenomenon, right? There's a lot of opportunities out there. There's higher wages, more flexibility, big labor shortages. So you can always go do something else, right? To fill that time, to fill that void, to fill that loss of identity, whatever it might be. And I can help people through that. And that's what I call myself, a coach, a counselor, right? An advisor. Because to me, that's the most fulfilling part of my job, is to be able to sit down with people going through transitional times in their life. And sometimes it's by choice and sometimes it's not. In the times where it's not, it could be a lot of things. Dealing with an aging parent, the death of a spouse, a divorce after 30 years of marriage. There's a lot going on there, a lot to absorb. And I was talking to someone recently about this, that when I was 24 years old and I started my business, I did not have the capacity or the knowledge or the experience to relate to people the way that I do at 52 years old and 28 years in practice. Because just like the old famous show on whatever it was called Pawn Stars, you know, where the guy would say, after 25 years, you never know what's going to walk through that door. I can tell you in 28 years, everything has walked through my door. And because of that, I have the experience, the knowledge, and expertise to help coach people through these transitional moments. And many times I find it gratifying and satisfying to be here on their air during crazy times, whether it's shuttle disasters, financial disasters, pandemics, whatever it might be, to be that steady voice and that steady hand that helps people through these times. So again, I appreciate the opportunity to be on the show, and I appreciate you listening on a regular basis, as many of you do. And we're going to take a quick break, come back, and wrap it all up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. So where are you off to now, Hayes? That's what I always get, right? Where are you going now? Well, the 2020 conference for a company that I do a lot of business with is having their conference now in 2022, and it happens to be in Maui. So my family, myself, my lovely bride, Misty, my son, William, will be heading out on Sunday, and we're going to have a great time for 3 or 4 days, and then the conference will start. That's when Doug Hughes will be joining me out there as well, and his wife and his son. And then we'll spend a few days at the Grand Wailea in Maui, and then we'll be back on May 4th. So that's the plan, and we're sticking to it. So thankfully, we do not have to wear masks for 8 hours on American Airlines heading out to Maui. And boy, I prayed for that one, and the good Lord came through for me, because I did not and was not looking forward to that at all. But, you know, thankfully, that got overturned, and I'll be in good shape for the 8 hours. And the appeal process they're going through right now, I don't think it's going to matter for this instance, but they are certainly trying to position for future times where they can mandate things. So we'll see how that goes. I'm not going to get into all that. It's not worth my time or effort or even my breath. So let's take a long break. Again, I won't be here next week. You'll get to replay this week's show. Head over to the podcast, 2025, The Final Drive. You won't regret it, guys. Have a great one, everyone. Goodbye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.